One title, one word title, covered. It's a common and simple word, but one with more meaning than you might imagine upon first glance. It's kind of amazing how this word is used. It obviously conveys tender care, doesn't it? I mean, look at that picture on your screen. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, I don't need to say very much about that, because that little gosling there is covered by a devoted mother in the most precious, tender-hearted way. That's precious. So, covered, it conveys the idea of tenderness and compassion and devoted care. It also conveys the idea of warmth, because on a cold night, we sleep under the covers. It also conveys the idea of insured. If you're insured, your home is covered from damage and loss. It conveys the idea of concealment, as in the army moved out under the cover of darkness. And if something is fully covered, it can't be seen. Sometimes it has the idea of meaning to report on, as in the trial was covered by several newspapers. It can mean a disguise, as in the robber wore a mask to cover his face. Sometimes it has the meaning of substitute, as in I'm covering the late shift for my coworker, meaning to stand in for, to take the place of. Think about that one for a moment. Substitute. Sometimes it means to pay for. Do you have enough money to cover the cost? Or it may even have reference to travel. We covered 10 miles each day. It may have reference to authority. As a pastor, I am under the covering of my overseer, my bishop, under the cover of his authority. It sometimes means undergrowth. There is considerable game cover around the lake. Sometimes it can mean a facade. The company was a cover for an international swindle. It can sometimes mean admission price. There's a $5 cover charge at the door. It can mean a coating, as in a blanket of snow covered the field, or his car is covered in mud. It can mean a binding, something that binds, as in a book cover. It can mean surrounded. The police give instructions, come out of the house, we've got you covered. We've got you surrounded. It can mean backup. You've seen it on TV. There's a firefight and one person is going to move to another position. And before he moves, he says to the other shooters on his side, I'm going to move. Cover me. Cover me. Watch my back. It can also refer to abundance. Pastor Jeremy preached just a couple of weeks ago about the quail. And it said that God caused the wind to blow and quails covered the camp. Covered it. That's a lot. It has the idea of protection, as in a manhole cover or an awning that covers us from the sun. It carries the idea of shelter, as in the panicked onlookers ran for cover. And in that word, the synonyms would be things like refuge, sanctuary, haven, hiding place. Keeping all of that in mind, consider the words of the psalmist in Psalms 32 and 1 when he said, blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. And again, in Psalms 85 and 2, you have forgiven the iniquity of your people. You have covered all their sin. And this one is from Psalms 139, verse 13, you're familiar with, but take a look at it fresh and new because it tells us something incredible. He said, for you formed my inward part. Talking about when he was in the womb, in his mother's womb. You formed my inward part. You covered me in my mother's womb. You weren't even aware of it. You were just an embryo. The cover started long before you entered, before you ever saw the light of day. You were covered even in the womb. In Psalms 140 and 7, O God, the Lord, the strength of my salvation, you've covered my head in the day of battle, when times get tough. and there's warfare going on. You've covered my head in the day of battle. And then Isaiah 61 and 10, he said, I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. He has covered me with robes of righteousness. And those are his own robes. Covered me with robes of righteousness, because I am not righteous, but I am covered and clothed in the righteousness of Jesus, just as the Father covered the prodigal when he returned. He ran to meet him, would not allow the servants in the household to see his son in rags and filth and dirt with the smell of pigs and the mud from the pig pen. He covered him. And the Greek makes it very clear that the robe he chose was his own robe. Not just covered in anything, but covered in his righteousness. For he who knew no sin was made sin for us, that we might become the righteousness in him, be made righteous in him. He's covered us with the robe of righteousness. And then this wonderful, wonderful passage in Psalms 91 that says, he who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In him I will trust. I'll mention this to you, and I just thought of it, and I just remembered. But in that one verse, there are four different names for God. Most High in Hebrew is, I think it's Jehovah Sabaoth. You also have Almighty, which would be Adonai. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my God. All four of those are four different Hebrew names for God, each one showing you something about his character. Just how much of God do we need to be convinced, to be assured that he is indeed our refuge and fortress? In him I will trust. Surely he shall deliver you from the snare of the trapper and from the deadly pestilence. He shall cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. I don't know if you've thought about it, but actually covering is one of God's very first acts in behalf of mankind. One of the very first things that God did for us. You remember in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve sinned, and then acutely aware of their sin, they ran and hid at the sound of God's voice, and all of humanity has been running ever since. They hid in shame because their eyes were open and they saw that they were naked, exposed, stripped, bare, ashamed, uncovered, with no place to hide. They desperately tried to cover themselves with fig leaves. But their man-made, self-manufactured covering made from fig leaves was totally inadequate. Do you not find it interesting that the only thing Jesus cursed while on earth was a fig tree with nothing but leaves? And that's when God stepped in. That God took the initiative. It is an act of grace. Don't be among those who say, well, the Old Testament is all about law and the New Testament is about grace. There is law and grace in both Testaments. And right here, you see one of the earliest pictures of grace. God taking the initiative to step in and to cover Adam and Eve. He takes the initiative. What they have done, their man-made covering is inadequate, and so are ours. And in this, you see the very first gospel sermon preached not with words, but in the symbolic actions of God's grace. He covered them with animal skins. And it is the very first declaration that without the shedding of blood, there is no remission. It is the first illustration of substitution, the innocent dying for the guilty. Mercy spared the offender and offered a substitute in his place. An animal was slain, his blood was shed, the innocent dying for the guilty. As one commentator put it, with a tender, forgiving hand, the Father took the life of one yet blameless to provide a covering for the man. It portrays the only way that fallen man can approach his Creator, by a covering divinely appointed at the expense of another. I want to share with you a portion written from my favorite writer, one of my favorite writers. His name is Calvin Miller. And he actually taught at Beeson for a while. He was a Baptist minister, pastored in Omaha for many, many years. He wrote a lot of great books, one of the greatest writers that I've ever read after. One of his most famous books is called The Singer. It is an allegory, the gospel in allegory, told in other words. It is an incredible, incredible book. The Singer, which is a reference to Jesus. The song is the gospel, the singer, the song. And after writing about the New Testament, he went back and wrote about the creation in allegory. He called this book A Requiem for Love. A requiem is a song that you write and play at a funeral. So it is a requiem for love, because in the garden when man sinned, love died, is what he's talking about. That's what he's pointing about, talking about. And I pick up in the story, probably might need my, let's see if I can do it without my glasses. Picks up at the point where Adam and Eve have sinned. Now in this he uses allegory, so he uses words that are substitutes. For example, he talks about, in this story, he talks about earth maker. Now who do you think that might be? That's the Creator, isn't it? That's God. He talks about the world hater. Who does that sound like? You know. He talks about terra, T-E-R-R-A, as in terra firma, for the earth. Okay? And he takes up, here's how he, I wish I could write like this. I'm just glad at least I can read it. And here's what he says. Adam and Eve have sinned. It's been exposed. And here's what he says. They came at last, old enemies, whose warring hostilities had fallen on the battlefield of two weak human wills. Will you walk them to the gates, earth maker, or shall I? The world hater mocked. Look, he laughed at their crude coverings. The man and the woman looked down at the hastily appointed leafy shields they had draped about themselves in a vain attempt to hide from the piercing eyes of him who looks through skin and so beheld their hearts. They only stood in silence, wishing themselves smaller, begging inwardly that the distant mountains fall upon them. It is the end of dignity, the hater gloated. See them now, earth maker, made little by their infidelity. Now they hate. So far, only me. But soon, perhaps each other. And oh, the glorious hate of all their descendants, that in the millennia to come shall battle bleed your world. The Father's spirit grieved. A silence followed, and the hater hissed, "Behold your fallen royalty." He gestured to the couple who listened, wounded at the conversation. Their nakedness is inward, and yet they feel it outward. "See your lovers wrapped in shame," he mocked. "Their children's children will lay waste each other in 100,000 pointless wars, each one based on hate. Today, earth maker, I close the garden of your hopes. Go ahead, try to sell each generation, each coming generation peace. They will always come to me for apples." And to Adam and Eve, we hear these words, "Come," said the Father Spirit. "Come," he beckoned. The man looked at his wife and said, "We must leave now." The three walked together for the last time on the shaded paths they once enjoyed in hope, when new laughter was the raucous joy announcing that man had come. Now a pall of silence shrouded them with pain. The Father's Spirit spoke at last. "There is coming to the world you inherit a singer who will sing a song of dignity and life. And Terra, in a happier age, shall see sanctuary born again. Beyond these gates, life will be hard, and worse, it will be temporary. But remember my promise, a singer, that you may live without despairing." He covered them. And all through the Bible, you find pictures of this. You find portraits of it. You find it very early in Genesis when Noah built the ark. He constructed it out of gopher wood. And after it was constructed, many of us went up to see the replica of the ark. It was an amazing structure. And after it was built, the flood is coming. There's a problem. There's yet a problem, and God instructs him that he is to pitch it from within and without. Pitch is like a tar substance. He has to waterproof it. Because without the tar, without the pitch, it'll leak. It will leak. It has to be waterproofed. So he said, smear it. And he coated the vessel on the side, the bottom and the sides, with pitch. Pitch it within and without. Here's what's interesting about that. The Hebrew word for pitch is the Hebrew word kopher. It is the same exact word that is translated atonement. Atonement. A ransom, something bought with a price. And so Noah, let me get the right person in the ark. Noah is covered, a ransom, an atonement. It is a picture that will cover you from every storm. Otherwise, he would have perished and drowned. But in the ark, he was covered with a ransom. You see it in Egypt on that awful and dreadful night. There was but one place of refuge from the angel of death. When the angel came into the camp of Egypt, into the land of Egypt, there was but one place of safety, and that was under the covering of the Passover lamb on the doorpost and the mantles. And he said, when I see the blood, I will pass over you. You see it again as they journey through the desert. Accompanying them was a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. The cloud was not only their guide, it was their covering from the blistering heat of the Sinai wilderness. It was their shade from the desert sun. You remember when Moses in the mountain prayed, Lord, show me your glory. I would remind you that before he prayed, show me your glory, you back up a few verses, you will hear him saying, Lord, show me your ways. Maybe if we prayed, show me your ways, we would know more of his glory. That's another sermon. And God explained to him, you can't see, your humanity is too frail to endure, to bear. You won't survive if you see my glory in its fullness. But I will hide you in the cleft of a rock. And it is that imagery that we sing when we sing that old hymn, Rock of Ages, Cleft for Me. I will hide you in the cleft of a rock, and I will cover you with my hand. And as he passed by, the King James said, when he removed his hand, it said he saw his hinder parts. Literally, it's the idea, saw his afterglow. Like a bride when she walks down the aisle, after she has passed, the train of her gown follows behind her. And what Moses saw was the afterglow, the train, the regal train of God's glory. He was covered in the mountain by the hand of God. And what about Jericho, that infamous city? When the city walls fell and judgment came upon the inhabitants of Jericho, there was only one place of safety that was under the covering of a scarlet cord. A harlot named Rahab found refuge under a crimson covering. On the Day of Atonement, the high priest entered into the most holy place, into the very presence of Almighty God. He went in with a burning incense in his censer. It provided a cloud covering for him so that he did not die in the presence of God. And we read over in 1 Samuel chapter 6. After the ark, remember, it was taken by the Philistines when they brought it to the battle and they pronounced Ichabod upon the land of Israel. The glory has departed from Israel. The Philistines thought they had a great trophy and God visited them with great judgment. They couldn't wait to get the ark back to Israel. They put it on a cart, remember, had it hauled back into Israel, and it journeyed into the region of called Beth Shemesh. And when the men of Beth Shemesh saw the ark, they knew what it was, obviously. They went to the Ark of the Covenant, and curiosity got the best of them. They opened it and looked inside and instantly perished. Because inside that ark was the broken law of God. And to look in it, they had to remove the mercy seat. The mercy seat was on top of the ark, cherubim on either end, cherubims with their wings stretched out over it. And on the Day of Atonement, that is where the high priest would sprinkle the blood of the Passover sacrifice on the mercy seat to attend. That was the covering over the broken law. And a single glance at the broken law of God, the broken law of God, without the mercy seat to cover, and they perished. Job chapter 14, he said, "My offenses will be sealed up in a bag. You will cover over my sin." Not a cover-up. No. That's not how it's done. You will cover my sin. The Old Testament story of Mephibosheth. He was the grandson of Saul. When Saul was killed and the word came that he had died and Jonathan had been killed, Mephibosheth was next in line for the throne. Fearing that David would take his life, seeing him as a rival for his own kingdom, the maid picked him up. He was just a baby, picked him up to take him out and hide him. And in her haste, she dropped him and he was crippled. He was lame from a fall. Does that resonate? All of humanity lame from a fall in the garden. They were hiding out in a place called Lo Debar, which means no pasture or no bread, no sustenance. He thought that David would have him killed. What he didn't know, that was before he ever entered the realm of human existence, before he was ever born, a covenant had been cut between David and Jonathan. Don't you miss this. A covenant had been cut. And in that day, the custom was that there was a covenant of love, and they would make a mark in each other's hands, and they would make a blood covenant. And Jonathan said, in that covenant swear that you will show kindness to me and my house forever. You will be king. I will be second in your place. Before he was ever born, an ancient covenant guaranteed his absolute safety. And in the palace, David asked the question, "Is there yet another of David's, of Saul's household that I may show kindness to?" And they said, "Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth." He sent his soldiers, ransacked the kingdom to find this cripple, who in under normal circumstances would have been an enemy. He brought him, and when they found him, I'm sure Mephibosheth thought, "It's up, it's over. They found me now." They took him to the palace. He comes in trembling and afraid, certain that he will be put to death. And instead, he hears the king say, "Fear not, for I will surely show you kindness for my servant Jonathan's sake. Forgive one another, tenderhearted, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you." For Jonathan's sake. They bathed him, they shaved him, they put on royal garments. Remember, he was a cripple. They brought him to the king's table. And there he sits with all those... With Absalom, beautiful hair, beautiful all of the king's men, Solomon there, all of the king's men, and here's little Mephibosheth. And I imagine they kind of look over at him and wonder, "What are you doing here at the king's table?" And all he would have to do is say, "Look at your father's hand. Look in the king's hand. There is a scar. My cover charge." And the devil comes to you and tells you, "You know, we feel like we're just nobody from nowhere and unimportant and insignificant. Who are you that you think you should have some right to the kingdom of God and the riches of heaven? We don't have any right on our own. It is nothing of our merit. This is all about grace and mercy. All of the covering was provided by grace and mercy. And when he comes to accuse you, just point him, tell him, look in the scar in the king's hand, in both hands, in his feet, in his side. Those scars, the price of my admission." When Mephibosheth sat at the king's table, his deformities were hidden. They were covered. they could not be seen. Couldn't be seen. So we stand today knowing the blessedness of sins forgiven and transgressions that are covered. We've been to Calvary. We have bowed at His cross. We know the power of the crimson flow that frees us, that heals us, that cleanses us, that covers us. We've experienced the warmth of His tender care. His grace is the insurance against damage and loss. At the cross He covered for us, stood in for us, took our place. And in His love, my deformities cannot be seen. The cover charge to get into heaven, the price of admission has been paid in full by another. And in an abundance of tender mercy, I am bounded by His love, surrounded by His grace, and guarded by His peace. And no matter what I may face, He always has my back. He is my rear guard. He is my protector, my shelter, my refuge, my sanctuary, my hiding place. Rock of ages, cleft from me. Let me hide myself in Thee. Noted Bible teacher and scholar Malcolm Smith. He is from the British Isles. I don't know if he's British or Scottish or what, but from that region. He spent time with a group of shepherds who had hundreds, maybe thousands and thousands of sheep. And he told a story of a day when one of the ewes gave birth. That's not Y-O-U-U, that's E-W-E-U, the female sheep. One of the ewes gave birth. And as she was giving birth, she died. And a little orphan lamb is left without a mother. Just absolutely pitiful, crying. He would go to another sheep and try to nurse. She would turn and sniff him, knowing that this one was not her own. She would, with her head, butt him away. Malcolm said, I had such compassion for this little lamb. I asked the shepherds, what will we do? We got a hand feed. And he said, it was during the season when the ewes were giving birth. They said, we're far too busy for that. You can't just let this lamb die. They said, just wait and watch. And so it happened that same day, another ewe gave birth. And on this occasion, the lamb died. And the mother was left without her lamb. It seemed like a perfect fit, doesn't it? You have a baby lamb without a mother and a mother without a lamb. They said, we'll put them together. And Malcolm said, it'll never work because she will take one sniff of that lamb and know that it's not hers and will reject it and drive it away. They said, just watch. The shepherds went and took the lamb that had died and skinned him. And they took the coat of the lamb that died and covered it, wrapped it around, and affixed it to the orphan lamb. They placed him beside the mother sheep. She turned, and when she sniffed, when she smelled, the smell was fragrant of her own. And a little lamb, an orphan lamb destined to die, rejected, found a home and life. That is exactly the picture that we have of our fall in humanity and our sin. The stench of sin makes us unacceptable, unapproachable to a holy and pure and just God, rejected and driven away. But 2,000 years ago, on a place called Calvary, a lamb died. A lamb was slaughtered. And today we are covered. That we read it today. You've clothed me in the robes of righteousness. We are covered and wrapped in the righteousness of the Lamb that died. And orphans and rejects and those destined to perish have found life and a home and a father because we are covered.